Okay, so yesterday, just have to finish off a few points from yesterday. We had the opportunity to focus on a topic important for our status in Tshuva in many ways, and happened to connect to Tzom Gedalia, and it was the issue of Kabbalah's Lashon Hara, and it focused on the delicate balance that we have, that on the one hand we have a prohibition of Kabbalah's Lashon Hara, and at the same time we recognize that we have an obligation to be responsible. And therefore, if there is danger to ourselves or others that is related to us, so we have to act on it. And that was where Gedaliah ben Achikam made a mistake. He refused to accept a report that there were those out for his life, and that had consequences for him and those around him, and the Gemara suggests that he's held responsible for that, so that it was a misapplication of the prohibition of Kabbalah's Lashon Hara, and there is an obligation to be choshesh. So we got into that question of the balance of how exactly do we keep those two in proper measure with each other, and some very delicate tightrope acts we spoke about, and that was itself a delicate tightrope act, and we spoke about what the Isser of Kabbalah's Lashon Hara would be. Is it to believe, or is it to act on, and the assumption that belief is not necessarily under our control? And we spoke about one of the mitigating factors that may allow, or at least excuse, Kabbalah's Lashon Hara. So I want to add one very practical part of it. I know this also relates to some questions practically that have been asked by some guys here, but also it's just a major aspect of the discussion that needs to be covered. So we saw there was a machlokas about what Kabbalah's Lashon Hara is, as we mentioned a minute ago, and that the machmir, so to speak, was the Chafetz Chaim, who said that even to believe the Lashon Hara is a big problem. And those who felt that that wasn't really a reasonable request, like Rav Moshe Sternbach and others, said, no, it's not about the believing. It is about acting on it. So it seems that, according to all those opinions, the prohibition is not on hearing Lashon Hara. It's something beyond hearing it. So either accepting it as a belief, or acting upon it, but not just hearing it. So let me ask you this question. Is there at all a prohibition or a problem or an issue at all with hearing Lashon Hara? If that is not equal to Kabbalah's Lashon Hara, if that is a stage below it, so does the halacha regulate that at all? What do you think? What are your thoughts, Ari?
I mean, maybe you could take two stabs at it. On one hand, you could say that listening is not dangerous, but it's only dangerous in the part that might lead to acting upon the Lashon Hara. Or you could say that, no, debasing yourself even to hear words that are derogatory in nature is reason for concern in and of itself.
So that's an interesting framing, because I would think that probably, you could probably find broad agreement that it is dangerous. Right, that clearly it is a short jump from hearing to believing. Not even much of a jump, more like a walk, slow walk. So, I'm not sure if there'd be so much disagreement that it's dangerous. The question is still, what would you do because of that danger? That danger constitutes an isser? And if so, how would we formulate it? So, one question we have is that, for the most part, it's passive. Right? To say that you're not allowed to hear something, so we don't always have control. We have some ability, and sometimes, we described yesterday, there may be a very unusual situation where somebody will come up to you and say, I'm interested in telling you Lashon Hara right now. What do you think? I just heard the juiciest story. Are you ready to be Makabalist? So if we're lucky enough, so to speak, to have people frame their Lashon Hara that way, okay, so then we have an opportunity to opt out. But it's usually not the way it happens. So still we could frame the question, some situations that maybe you're already likely to know what a conversation is going to be like, or maybe this group has shown itself how they like to talk, or maybe it's a question of reading something. And you know already what the style of the website or the paper or whatever it is. You know that it's likely to contain certain content. It's also an interesting question. I remember asking my Rebbe this in elementary school, that what about informing yourself? Let's say you hear your teacher, you're turning your back is to them, but you hear your teacher rebuking a student. So if you turn around, you'll see who he's talking to. Is that a form of Lashon Hara, of telling Lashon Hara to yourself? An interesting question in and of itself. And the language of the Rishalmi in Maseches Peah, so we had reference yesterday to the Gemara in Erechin, which talks about different actors in the crime of Lashon Hara, the speaker and the receiver and the subject. So the Gemara in the Rishalmi in Maseches Peah has the language Hayodo, the one who knows it, which is itself interesting what to do with that. So is there a prohibition of Shmiyas Lashon Hara? So the Chofetz Chaim thought that there was. And he thought that based maybe on a Darabbanan level and maybe on a Daraisa level also. So why would he say it's Darabbanan? That's based on a Gemara Maseches Ksubis. You saw that Gemara? And that there the Gemara has a statement based on a line in Parshas Kisetze, which is probably an asmachta. This is why it sounds like it's the Drabbanan. But there the Gemara talks about how every part of the body has a purpose, even though it doesn't seem like it. So what about the earlobe? So if you have an earlobe, what are you supposed to do with it? So the Gemara suggests, interpreting a pasuk in Parshas Kisetze, that maybe it's there to help if you hear something that you're not supposed to be hearing. So then you can stick your earlobe in your ear, and that will save you. So that perhaps sounds like there's a prohibition of even hearing Lashon Hara in the first place. And that is interesting. You could talk about whether it's referring to Lashon Hara or something else for some synergy here that we did see in our Gemara, the whole sugya of Nifl Peh, and how that's a concern. So presumably that's a concern both for the speaker and for the listener too. So maybe the Gemara is talking about that. But that's one possible takeaway from that Gemara, that if there's something you shouldn't be listening to, so you have your earlobe there to stop it up. Whether or not that is an issur d'rabbanan, on a level of advice, and on a level of halachic responsibility, we can also understand that, look, it's, like we said, a very short walk from hearing to believing. So it doesn't seem like it's a great idea if you know that people are speaking Lashon Hara, and you have the ability to avoid it, so it would seem wise. And that also synergistically a little bit ties into our Masechta, the whole question of Bedikas Chametz and related topics. Where is your responsibility start and end? So at what point do you say, well, this is my fault, he was talking to me, I was just listening, I was passive. So when you know that there is a certain risk of something which is very close to an Aveira, if it's not the Aveira itself, but it's going to put you in very near proximity, so it doesn't seem like it's a great idea. The Chafetz Chaim also thought that maybe it was an Issur D'Oraisa. Why? So the pasuk that we mentioned yesterday, that's the source of the prohibition of Kabbalas Lashon Hara. So somebody remind me, what was that pasuk? From Parshas Mishpatim, yeah, Vavu? So what's interesting, and it's interesting on a lot of levels, is that the Gemara in Masechet Sanhedrin has an additional drasha from that pasuk. Now, what other halacha is derived from that pasuk? That a dayan is not permitted to have ex parte conversations. Very important halacha, which is not always given the attention it deserves, because it's true for formal dayanim for sure, but it's also good advice for people who are not in that formal role, but are close to it, that it's not right for a dayan to listen to one side, not in the presence of the other. We call legal terms ex parte communication. Now, here, you could see how both interpretations of Shav work for this as well. So yesterday we saw, Lo Sisa Shema Shav, you could translate Shav as useless, you could translate Shav as Sheker. And both ways the pasuk could be understood, because if Shav means useless, so yeah, you shouldn't listen to a negative report that has no purpose. You can listen if it's l'toelet, if it's purposeful. But you shouldn't listen if it doesn't have any purpose. Lashon hara is not l'toelet. But Rashi Nuklis translates Shav as Sheker, so that also worked. It was surprising, we had to explain it a little bit, but that you shouldn't listen to a report that may not be giving you an accurate or complete or even remotely true picture. So what about in this context, if the pasuk is talking to dayanim, saying you shouldn't listen to one side without the other? So there also both interpretations fit. Right? Because if you say don't listen to a report l'shav, that doesn't have any purpose, so then the thrust of the message is that, listen, if you're a dayan sitting on a bezdin, so yeah, you're going to have to listen to a lot of bad stuff. That's what you're there for. You're there to try to work through all the accusations and all the nastiness. So fine, you have to listen. But if they're not even in session, if the other party is not here, the very essence of a bezdin session, you got to have everybody in front of you. So if they're not even functioning right now as a bezdin, so then what justification is there to listen to one party without the other? So don't listen to his allegations when it's l'shav, when it's not justified by the bezdin context. But what if we interpret it like Rashi and Unklus, and we understand l'shav as meaning that refers to sheker? So how do we understand that if we apply it to the Bezdin context specifically? So here there is also a very important Moshe Haskel, that what the pasuk is telling us is that as a dayan, you have a responsibility to be objective and fair, and also to keep everybody honest, right? To create an environment where the parties themselves are going to be honest and fair. So if you let one talk and the other one's not there to object, so you are essentially opening the door to Sheker. And you are giving support to Sheker. It's crucial that even though people are going to lie perhaps with the opponent there, but they're at least going to be somewhat intimidated. They're going to know that they're going to be refuted and they're not going to get away with it as easily. So that's one thing. But if you let one party talk and the other guy's not there, then you're really asking for trouble. So the idea of Lo Sisa Shem Hashav, in the context of Dayanus, we could understand it both ways, whether it's talking about Shav useless or Shav sheker. So writes the Chafetz Chaim, if that Isser is the same Isser, it's the same Pasuk telling us both, you shouldn't be Mekabel Lashon Hara, and you shouldn't listen to one party without the other as a Dayan. So in the context of Dayanus, it's clear that we're talking about listening. The Isser is about Shmia specifically. So then, perhaps when we're talking about Kabbalah Lashon Hara, also the Isser then practically involves Shmia also, even just listening. The same way a judge can't say, well, I'll talk to one party without the other one here, but it's okay, I'm not going to believe it, I'm just going to listen to it, but we know he's not supposed to do that. So too, the Makabal Lashon Hara, he doesn't have the right to say, I'll just listen and I'm not going to be Makabal. So that's interesting. Now you could, as many others do, object to this equation. And you could say that, no, the Pasuk is saying one thing, but different individuals have different roles. So you're not supposed to, the Pasuk is basically saying, do not support and involve yourself in the furthering of false allegations or unfair allegations against someone else. If you are a Dayan, that means that you can't even listen. And if you're not a Dayan, your responsibility is different. You're not going to create the same problems just by listening, but you're not allowed to be Makabel in a more active sense. So this is a machlokas in general, how exactly to relate to the message of this pasuk. It's interesting, among some of the mafarshim, so you find opposite interpretations, as you always would. So, for example, the Lutzker Rav, we've mentioned in Parshashir a few times, the Zayim L'Torah, so he writes that the pasuk indicates that you shouldn't even listen, because maybe all these words are subject to theoretical translation. Says Losisa Shema Shav. Shav means not just Shekri rights, but total hogwash. And you know, something that you wouldn't even think of believing. So you might think, okay, so since it's such obvious bogosity, so then I don't have to abstain from listening, there isn't any risk. And the Pasuk is coming to say that no, even then you shouldn't listen. While seeing some other svarim, kind of the opposite interpretation. That Losisa Shema Shav, so we raise the question, if it means Sheker, why do you need to be told? And what exactly is your obligation? So some understand the Pasuk is saying that when the report is Sheker, or possibly Sheker, or likely Sheker, then you shouldn't accept it. But in order to be Mavarer that it's Sheker, you're going to have to listen. So maybe the Pasuk Stavka telling you there's no prohibition of listening. So that's a point we'll come back to in a moment. But assuming that there is an issue with listening, so this comes up practically all the time. Right, so what does that mean in our real life situation? And for example, what if somebody is in a context where he's sitting with a group of people and they start speaking Lashon Hara? So what do you do? What do you advise such a person? Zach, you want to give some advice?
Change the topic.
So sometimes, if you're very skillful, you can change the topic. So there's a range of possibilities here. The Chofetz Chaim discusses this. And it's very instructive to look at what the Chofetz Chaim says here, because you know, sometimes people have the attitude the Chofetz Chaim is an angel, he's living on a different plane. He doesn't understand us real human beings, what we deal with. But here from this discussion, you see that he has a lot more appreciation for some of the challenges that human beings and regular mortals go through than we might sometimes appreciate. So he describes there, he says, so let's say you find yourself in a situation where people are speaking Lashon Hara. Now clearly we understand, ideally you wouldn't have been sitting in that chevret to begin with. And we understand also that, like Zach is saying, if you can stop it, so matogu manoim, right? So if you can change the subject skillfully, then you're a superhero. Then that's terrific. Not always so doable. You may not have the conversational talent to do that, or you may not be an influential party in the discussion to begin with. So it may not be workable. So you're probably thinking, well, what about Tochacha? I should stop them. I should tell them not to do this. So here again, the Chofetz Chaim is showing that he chaps reality of human nature. We know that it's not always effective to be mocha, and it's very often counterproductive. So I think part of what we've seen is that when this is true probably about everything, but maybe it's most true when it comes to Lashon Hara, that if you call somebody out on it, so they get defensive, and they're more likely to double down. Oh, you think I shouldn't say this? Let me tell you why I gotta say this. Let me tell you why it's really Lito Ellis, why he really deserves it, why I'm really sure, whatever it is. So the great likelihood, unless you're really good at it, unless you're really talented, but the more likely possibility is if you try to object, then you're very possibly going to fuel the fire. So that's not always practical either. It's not always practical for you not to be there in the first place, for you to change the subject, for you to get them to stop. And here again, human nature, you recognize that not everybody's going to be in a position where they can leave. Maybe, for example, you're on a helicopter. He doesn't discuss that exact scenario, but that would be a good example where it would be kind of hard for you to just leave. And also, one more point for humanity. So we recognize that not everybody feels that it's socially possible for them to stick their thumbs in their ears for the rest of this conversation and are going to be able to effectively do that either. So if you are stuck, you can't leave, you can't change the subject, you can't jump out of the helicopter, you can't do any of these things, you can't plug up your ears. Although nowadays, you know, if Chofetz Chaim had lived in a year, an era of constant headphones and Bluetooth, it is probably easier than it was once upon a time to just stick something in your ear and say, you got to listen to something else. But assuming that that's not possible, so he says, he's got three pieces of advice, what you should do. First of all, okay, you're stuck in this position, this is what's happened. But so you should not do anything to endorse the conversation. So you shouldn't be adding to it, for sure. It's so true. Don't do that. Right? You should not be, even non-verbally, you shouldn't be nodding or doing anything else that looks like you are crediting what's being said. That would be a serious issue. Second, says you should not be makabo. We assume that Kabbalah is defined any of the ways, so whatever we define Kabbalah is, according to him it means to believe it, but could mean something else according to others. Either way, you should make sure not to be makabo. And then he uses a phrase which is most well known from Hilchos Shabbos, but is a concept in halacha across the board. Says it shouldn't be nichale. Now we know that, for example, in Hilchos Shabbos, not limited to Hilchos Shabbos, but most well known from Hilchos Shabbos, that if something is a davar she'eino misgavein, if something is unintentional, action A is going to lead to action B without intent for it to do so. That's normally not your problem. It's machlokas megamara, that's what we conclude, it's not your problem. However, if it's a psik reisha, if it's definitely going to happen, if A will for sure lead to B, then it is your problem. However, there's another condition. If it's not nichale, it goes back to not being your problem, at least not fully. So a psik reisha is only fully your problem if it's nichale, if you're happy with the result. So using that terminology, it says, okay, you shouldn't be taking any pleasure in this conversation. You have to kind of neutralize whatever benefit that you may be getting from the discussion. So that all is helpful. It may be challenging also. But this is Chofetz Chaim's guidance to how to address a situation when one is against their will, being on the receiving end of a Lashon Hara conversation. Double. Got any good Lashon Hara?
Could you say a potential nafkamina about hearing if it's directed or abundant? Let's say your parents are saying it to you. So obviously there's a chiyuv, the right to keep the aim, and it would be disrespectful to, you know, do any of the above. Are there any exceptions or circumstances where you kind of have to take it for other considerations?
That's a very complex question, which I'm going to try to address in a surface way because the complexity deserves a lot more time, but I'll try to give it like a one-minute approach. So it's very complex because, first of all, kibud av v'eim is a huge imperative, but we also have a clear direction from the Gemara that a kibud av v'eim does not justify prohibition. So if a parent tells you to do something that is prohibited, so you're not permitted to do that. And it's also clear from the poskim, Rambam and Shulchan Aruch, that this extends even to prohibitions midrabanan. So if a parent tells you to do a prohibition midrabanan, you're not supposed to do that. Now, if it's a minig or a chumra, that gets into some interesting nuances, but a prohibition derives to the rabbanan, you're not allowed to do. The question is whether there isn't any way to avoid the prohibition, even midrabanan here. Because if we look at the Chafetz Chaim's kind of the d'eved scenarios, so that may be an Eisa. And especially as far as not being clear that there is a prohibition to Rabbanan of Shmiyah B'chalal, that's the whole discussion. So if we say that the prohibition is more about Kabbalah, that is in your hands a little bit more. And there probably is, and I don't want to generalize because of the sensitivity of the issue, but one has to be very careful in terms of how he relates to his parents. And there probably is room to handle it in a respectful way that doesn't involve running out of the room and screaming. And I'll just give one interesting application of this really specific case, which also draws upon another thing. So just parenthetically, and we'll loop it back into this issue. So we spoke yesterday about Tuelos, and we'll come back to that in a moment. So if what's being said is purposeful, if what's being said is necessary to protect someone, so then we understand that that is often a justification to say something that would otherwise be Lashon Hara. And by necessity, it's also going to affect the listener. The listener has to either be makabalit, or that's the whole discussion in the Gemara, maybe not full Kabbalah, but at least factor it in enough to act upon it for protection. So we know if somebody's dangerous, so that's an example of Tuelos. If I'm warning you, if I'm trying to warn Gedaliah ben Achikam, somebody's out to kill him, so he should listen, and he should at least take action if not being makabal. But what about, say, therapy? Now, what if somebody wants to come to a therapist and discuss their issues, which involve negative information about somebody else? So here, it's a huge topic. I'm just giving it the one-minute version. There is a lot to suggest that it could be justifiable under responsible circumstances. Really, the Chafetz Chaim himself says that, or at least considers that, because there's a Gemara in the beginning of the 8th Parak of Yuma. A little bit in Yonei Dioma, not really in Kippur topic, but it's right there in the Gemara's talking about Hilchos Yom Kippur, that Gemara says, Gemara darshins a pasuk, daiga b'levish, if there is a worry in a person's heart, so what should he do? The Gemara has two readings of what the pasuk says, yashchena, is it yisichena? Does it mean that he should take it away from his heart, or he should talk about it? Yisichena, he should have a sichel with somebody. So one could read that Gemara to say that there is a toelus involved if somebody is suffering, if somebody has anxiety about something, so it's purposeful to talk about it to somebody else. And if you put all the parts together, as the Chafetz Chaim notes, so it could be that if your anxiety involves someone else, to talk about it to another person could be viewed as toelus. Not necessarily because you're warning somebody about impending danger, we know already, that's Gedaliah ben Achikam. But even if it just contributes to your mental health, to be able to free yourself of anxiety and talking about it. Now, there's a lot to figure out what that means. Rashi over there in Yuma suggests that it means that maybe the person you're talking to can give you practical advice, can tell you what to do about it. But what if they're not going to give you practical advice, but just the talking is going to bring about mental relief? So many assume, and there's a lot to say, but again, I don't want to not do justice to this topic, but just in the interest of this time. So there is a lot to be said that it could be a justified conversation also. And then if we're saying that, it doesn't necessarily have to be a licensed therapist. It could be even a friend who might be able to provide the same role. And again, don't run with this without getting into further detail because I'm just telling the outline of it. But let's assume that could theoretically be a justification to listen to somebody if there is anxiety on their mind that they can relieve by talking to you. There's a Sefer Hasidim that some of the later Sfarim quote that has a different angle on it. He's coming from a different place, but he also could overlap that, let's say, somebody is on the warpath, and he's very upset, and he wants to tell the whole world about his issues with somebody. And you know that if you intercept, that if you choose to be the listener, so he's not going to have to tell the whole world, and you'll be able to kind of redirect his attitudes, and you'll be able to minimize the damage. So then that could also be a good argument for being the volunteer to be the listener, because there will be less harm done if you're the one in the line of fire, so to speak, than letting this individual continue to be aggrieved and go publish it on his blog and scream to the whole world. So there is a tzad that that could also be a justification to listen. So one way or the other is two very different points of focus as to why it is, but there could be justification to listen to somebody who is airing out their issues with other people and with under responsible circumstances. You know, a lot more to say about that. So within that context, to go back to Velva's specific situation, so Yitzchak Zilberstein has a tshuva, should have all heard of it, a fascinating posik in Eretz Yisrael, writes all kinds of very, very interesting things. So many years ago he wrote a letter that there was a woman who wrote to him, and she wrote that her mother is depressed, and she has issues with people, and she gives herself some relief by talking to her daughter about the issues that she has with people. And the daughter assumes that she has to listen. She can't say, sorry, I'm not going to give you any kind of filial relief. I'm going to just turn you off. And she also assumes that if she would decide not to believe anything that her mother's going to say, it's also not going to be so productive, not going to be so helpful, if she's not going to be makabel whatever the mother has to say. So Zilberstein wrote there, he said that you're right on both fronts. You're right that you should listen, and you're right that you shouldn't disbelieve necessarily what she's going to say. But there's still space. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be framed in the most negative way possible. So the mother tells you something, you can listen and also accept that it may be factual, but there still might be room to say that it's not necessarily they didn't necessarily mean it this way, it's not necessarily as offensive as it may come across, and perhaps you can redirect how it's being processed, and there is a productive role to play there. So that's just one example of the broader question, but there often is a space there to be faithful to both values at once, and it's important to appreciate and to consider how exactly to maintain that balance. But the balance also is applicable on a broader level. And here, even if we maintain that Shmias Lashon Hara is a bad idea, and perhaps even a prohibition, but it's sometimes necessary, as we see Lashon Hara overall is sometimes necessary for protection, and especially, this is a point really worth emphasizing, especially if we focus on this issue of Shmia as contrasted with Kabbalah in the full sense. Rav Chaim Ozer Grzinski is one of the great Gedolim of the last century. Is quoted by Rav Moshe Sternbuch and others. Rav Chaim Ozer said that if you have somebody who's in a position of responsibility, let's say he's the Rosh Yeshiva of a yeshiva, or he's the rabbi of a shul, and people are making allegations and making accusations about others, for the Shiva rabbi, for the head of the institution, to say that I'm not going to listen because Lashon Hara, says Rav Chaim Ozer, he says that's terrible. He says that's a total abdication of responsibility. That if you have an achrayus towards people, so then you have to listen to what's being said, so that you can evaluate what's true and what's not true. And Rav Sternbach, who quotes this, he takes the message further and emphasizes it, that a part of the responsibility of being in a position of authority is hearing what is being alleged and what is being claimed, and assessing whether it's something that needs to bring action. So to say, I'm not going to hear it, Lashon Hara, I don't want to hear it in the first place, so that is a abdication of responsibility, and that is a very dangerous thing. So putting together what we said, so what is the Eitzah for such a person? So the Eitzah would be, believe, would be to create as much of a space as possible between Shmiya and Kabbalah. So we said before that it's a short walk, a slow walk from Shmiya to Kabbalah, and that's why it's in general a bad idea. But sometimes it's necessary, and if it's necessary, so then where our active responsibility lies is to create a bigger distance between the Shmiya and the Kabbalah. And to recognize, okay, my responsibility involves Shmiya, but my responsibility also involves thinking very carefully whether this is something to be makabel or not. And that becomes the job of the moment at that point. So that is true for people in authoritative positions, for sure. But it's also true for all of us, because we have our responsibilities for ourselves, we have to protect ourselves, and sometimes we're confronted with information that might be relevant to us. It's fascinating. Etzel Chabad Chaim wrote a sefer, so there's a whole genre of, you can name the camera for it, it's my shelf over here, the whole shelf of commentaries on Chafetz Chaim alone. That second shelf from the bottom of there is pretty much all just Mefarshim on the Sefer Chafetz Chaim. So there's a lot written in the past 30, 40 years. And it builds on what the Chafetz Chaim has written, and also factors in some of the issues in modern society. So, for example, perhaps of all those Svarim up there, the one that's most respected in this kind of second generation is a sefer called Zerach Chaim, a few sections with Zerach Chaim, the Sivus Chaim, Shvilei Chaim, where the author has a lot to say and is very much quoted by later Svarim than him. And he notes that we live in a world today that's very interconnected. And, of course, we've been made to feel that more acutely in these past few months than we ever have, or at least in our own lifetimes. Certainly people knew this throughout history, but we've experienced over the past few months how we're very much impacted by what the guy next to us is doing. So it's hard to say, I'm just not going to be makabel or anything, I'm not going to look at anything, and I'll be fine, because very often what the person around you is doing does have an impact. So there's a greater need to be informed than there has been in the past. And, like I said, pandemic issues have happened throughout history, but it makes us realize just how much it's true. But also for other reasons, the nature of the contemporary world is that we're very much interconnected. So it's harder to say that I'm not going to listen to anything. So then what is the achrayus? The achrayus is to really appreciate the issues in objectivity and credibility that comes up in Lashon Hara, all of the reasons why Lashon Hara could be called true and false at the same time, and to really internalize those and take a very critical attitude towards what's being said. So very often it means I do have to listen, and at the same time I have to also be very critical about it and think very carefully, is what I'm saying, is what I'm hearing reliable, is it actionable, is it fair, and how should I process it? So the skills to be a responsible listener are all the more important than they ever have been. And a responsible reader, so a lot of our news comes from the internet and comes from sources like that. So the question of, say, reading something where there's a likelihood of disparaging information. So it's complicated. First of all, one question we have to consider is the Chafetz Chaim's condition that you can't endorse what's being said. So we have to be careful. Is a click an endorsement? If there's more traffic to a site, is that endorsement? Is linking to something an endorsement? Is forwarding to somebody something that you've read an endorsement? It takes a lot of judgment and evaluation. Where are you sharing information in a helpful way, and where are you considered to be endorsing what you're seeing? We know that retweeting has become a very controversial activity. So where exactly does that fit in? But since most of our news does come from sources like this, so being a responsible, involved citizen may mean that we have to, again, work very hard on creating a strong space between what might be otherwise called Shmia and Kabbalah. And ironically, perhaps, but it's a fact that as news has proliferated through the web and social media, so it's also gone down in terms of credibility and reliability, because it used to be that news only came from responsible professionals who had names. Now it's not true anymore. News is constantly being sent around from people who don't have any accountability and may not even have any identifying name attached. And we're being bombarded by information constantly that we don't know if it's anything close to reliable. But if that's where we get our news from, so then we have a greater obligation to be very careful listeners. But to close what we said yesterday, but again, that's what we're asking the Rabbeinu Shalom to evaluate us with a very broad sense of fairness. So that's also what we need to, the halachta b'drachim, we need to inculcate within ourselves as we take on this task of interpreting the information that comes at us. It's just to quickly recap, we didn't get to the Gezeirah d'Rabbah topic at all, so that will have to be a one-day topic, I'm willing, tomorrow, that we'll try hard to stick to. But you have the Makaris for that, and hopefully that will take you through tomorrow morning. Just tell you, just give you a little bit of a teaser, it is a fascinating topic in ways that we haven't discussed at all yet. So all the points that we talked about the Koach of the Rabbanan, and about Shofar specifically, now we'll move on to Lulav. There are whole new issues that we haven't seen yet, so shouldn't think it's more the same. But some fascinating considerations in that topic, a lot of questions that will throw themselves at you immediately when you start to see some of the Makaros. So we really have some very interesting material ahead of us as far as that's concerned. But just to quickly recap this point, so we spoke about this concern of if we say Kabbalah Slash and Har is either believing or acting, so what about listening? So Chofetz Chaim thought there was probably Nisa D'Rabbanan in listening, clearly bad idea listening, and maybe Nisa D'Raisa based on the relationship to the prohibition of ex parte communication with Dayanim. We talked about how to interpret that prohibition regarding Dayanim, why one might differentiate, etc. But one way or another, it certainly seems like it's at least a bad idea. And what happens if you are stuck? So we talked about how ideally you wouldn't put yourself in that position, or ideally you'd be able to leave, or maybe you'd be able to redirect the conversation. Musar is very hard in these contexts. If people double down, it becomes counterproductive. But the Chofetz Chaim acknowledges you could literally be stuck, and he has those three conditions, that you shouldn't do anything to support it, you shouldn't be makabel, and it shouldn't be nichulet. But then we also emphasize that there are circumstances where you do need to listen, and it's very important. We got that discussion a little bit about if you're helping people by listening, therapy-wise, etc. Got a little bit of the Kibbutz of Aim issues. And then we talked about the fact that somebody's in a position of responsibility. And Rav Chaim Moser emphasized has to listen to whatever's being said. He doesn't have the right to say, Lashon Hara, don't tell it to me. But there is still a lot of space that one can create between the listening and the Kabbalah, and that seems to be the obligation in the scenarios to create a bigger space and to not just go on the default reality that listening very quickly leads to Kabbalah, but to work on making sure that there is a responsible path between one and the other, and maybe a impediment between one and the other if that's what's called for. So we talked about that as relates to responsible positions, and how it relates to private citizens also, and also how it relates to our intake of information through the internet and other such venues. Okay, so we got a packed day tomorrow, a packed day afterwards. So we got a lot to do. Sorry, some chuva. We got a lot to pack in. I realized, Jordan, I think you had a hand up before, so I apologize if I missed your question. Okay, so
fine. I was just going to ask about a specific case, like with Lashon Hara, but that's fine.
Okay, so we won't speak any more Lashon Hara now, but if you want to ask later, you can. I wish everyone a wonderful day. It should be only good things and only good conversations.
Man, thank you, Rev.
Okay, thank you.